Welcome here to Wake Up Call with Dan Tortora, here with Adrian Autry, Syracuse Orange men's basketball alum, as well as an assistant coach currently on the team. Wake Up Call with Dan Tortora is proudly brought to you by Borio's Restaurant. Here with Adrian Autry once a month, 8891 McDonald's Parkway in Cicero for those listening in. And Adrian, first and foremost, to look at the broad scope of things, how do you feel this young team is kind of starting off the season? I know people have their opinion on the record, but you're obviously there with them every single day. So what have you taken away so far?
Well, I think when you have a young team, you realize there's going to be some little bumps and hiccups along the way. You always want to see how they're going to respond. And, each game and every game, these guys have responded and got back to work each game, whether it was a win or a loss. And they're just sitting there and they're figuring it out and making their way and kind of etching their own identity and coming together as a team. So it's been fun to work with this group, and they just continue to get better and keep battling each and every day.
Now, one of the guys that Jim Boeheim, after the last game, 71-69 win, would have thought that your team had lost to Louisiana Tech by 20 in that press conference, which I had the pleasure of being there and being right at the side of Boeheim when he got a little bit upset. But when you look at the statement he made on Chris McCullough, who's one of your guys, not only that you recruited, you brought him in. This is someone who had NBA scouts before he even set foot on a college campus. And Boeheim made this statement that he's 6'10 playing like he's 6'4 and he needs him more underneath. He doesn't even play at the foul line. What have you done to kind of assess that with Chris? And do you think it's an ongoing problem, or do you think it was maybe just that game that you were seeing a couple things, or maybe he's not close to the basket?
Well, I think that particular game was just was a tough game for him. Statistically, it was one of his worst games as far as just being able to get into really being in foul trouble and things like that. But Chris is someone that's skilled. He can score the ball from the outside, and he can score inside as well. So, I think it was a mixture of both. Him not being able to get into his rhythm, and Coach being frustrated with some of the shots that he did take. If he took six shots, and maybe that game four of them happened in the perimeter, I think that was what Coach was trying to say. You got to mix it up and be closer to the basket. But he's young. He's getting better each and every day and each week. So these are the learning curves that he has to go through.
When there is such a small class, and it is just Chris McCullough and Caleb Joseph, it's something that's maybe been a little bit uncharacteristic because there has been change, but there's been guys that are there that are established leaders. This year is a very different year. Obviously, there's no C.J. Fair on your side, no Jeremy Grant, no Tyler Ennis, so it creates, and by Keita as well, who I think goes unnoticed a lot of the time. So have you really been around, when you look at your short tenure as a coach here, has this been the year that you've lost the most in your mind?
Absolutely. Not only did we lose some young players unexpectedly, but when you look at this team, this is the first time that we had to play more inexperienced people, whether it was being my freshmen or guys that didn't get a lot of playing time from the year before. So since I've been here, this is the first time that I've experienced that in the last 4 years of just having a lot of inexperience in youth.
What has been, before we get a little bit deeper into this team, Wake Up Call with Dan Tortora live at Borio's Restaurant with Syracuse coach Adrian Autry, when we look at this team not having a guy like Jeremy Grant, in your mind, seeing him grow and everything that he did and being a part of obviously getting him to Syracuse, what do you think the forwards are lacking the most without a guy like Jeremy Grant? What do you see the most that's not there without Jeremy?
Well, I just wouldn't say Jeremy. I would say Jeremy and CJ, both of our forwards. These guys were, they had a lot of experience and they could make reads and they understood the position and how to play the position very well. But these two younger guys, Tyler Robinson and Chris McCullough, are learning how to play the position and how to make the reads, kind of the same baptism by fire. And so everything now is on a bigger stage where Jeremy had a chance to learn and practice, for a year, and CJ, he up and had two or three years under his belt. So just from that the experience standpoint, it was the biggest difference. And also Jeremy was, he was someone different. He was almost like a shot blocker for us as well. And these other two guys, I think once they start to understand the position, you'll start to see more of those plays made too, above the rim, blocking shots and rebounding and things like that.
I know it's early in the season. I know it's non-conference play, but when you look at your forwards right now, do you have someone that you feel has been a leader and kind of tried to corral the guys in practice? Have you seen that yet, or is it still just a bunch of guys trying to figure out who that's going to be?
I think you hit it right on the nail. It's a bunch of guys trying to really, figure out what their roles are, what their position is, things like that. So from that standpoint, it's hard to be a leader when you don't know what you're leading. So right now we're doing more than leading than anything, the coaches, the coaching staff, and myself. So.
Hey, coming from Adrian Autry, plenty more show here, Wake Up Call with Dance Tour Live. Want to let everybody know that's here. We have special Borio's restaurant cards that are right up here at our table. It'll get you 10% off throughout the men's basketball season at Borio's. You can come all throughout the week. You can come once a month. Whenever you come, the card is here for you. So make sure you pick up a card while you're here. And Adrian and I will be talking about a lot of things coming up, including if Tyler Roberson and BJ Johnson, his guys, are ever going to catch the ball with two hands. We'll talk about that in a couple minutes here on Wake Up Call.
You feel like you've seen every place in Central New York, but unless you've been to Borio's restaurant, you've never truly seen Central New York the way that it should be seen. No matter what the season, out on Oneida Lake, there is no better view than Borio's restaurant. From banquets to getting something to eat to Sunday brunch, Borio's restaurant offers authenticity to Central New York. It offers a difference to Central New York. Whether it's your anniversary, or a graduation party, a bridal shower, a wedding, Borio's Restaurant is where people go to have the experiences of a lifetime, with the owners being a part of your meal, being a part of your experience, of your time there. The owners care, the local people that always come back care, and the people that come in from out of state just to have a feel of what Central New York means to them, they care. Go to a place where people care about you, and your experience will never be equaled by any other place. The best view in town is at Borio's Restaurant. Head there now, 8891 McDonald's Parkway in Cicero, New York. Open Tuesday through Sunday, and remember Sunday brunch. Borio's Restaurant, 8891 McDonald's Parkway in Cicero, New York.
Welcome back here to Wake Up Call with Dan Tortora here live at Borio's Restaurant. For those listening in that aren't here, 8891 McDonald's Parkway in Cicero, New York. Best seat throughout the entire year. Great food and obviously a good atmosphere in the bar. Adrian Autry, Syracuse Orange men's basketball alum, played overseas as well. And someone has come back to coach on an all-alum team with Jerry McNamara and Mike Hopkins. So something you don't see around the country. And I kind of want to start there before we go back to the team itself. What's it like for you to have Mike Hopkins, have Jerry McNamara, and have Jim Boeheim? It's a very unique situation where you look up and down and it's all alumni that are going to be on the side there. How has that been for you for your few seasons that you've been here?
Well, I think it's been an easy transition for me to come and playing with guys that you know, not only from a professional standpoint, but from a personal standpoint. Me and Mike Hopkins, we played together some years ago, and I had a chance to meet forge a friendship with Coach Mack, Jerry Mack, while he was playing and after he played. So, just sharing our experiences as players and our experiences at Syracuse, helps us as a group, and we all get on the same page. And the one agenda, the one thing that's the common denominator, is that we love Syracuse and we want the best for Syracuse. So when you have that type of staff and that type of working environment, it makes it a lot of fun and a lot easier.
You and Mike and Jerry have all been coached by the man that's been here forever. So how much has he changed from your experience?
Well, I think, you know, he's adjusted, you know, as a person, everyone changes over time. I think he's a little bit more milder now. Not as intense as he was back when we were playing. And, you know, I think that would probably be the biggest difference, you know, that I see, that, you know, he has, when he chooses, with the experience, he even knows when to turn it on and when not to turn it on. He kind of, you know, chooses his battles, so to speak.
From when you played for Boeheim to right now, did he yell more at you, or does he yell more at the media?
More at the media now. you know, just with the new way media is and everything being out there and things like that, I think, you know, it's more distractions for players and even for coaches, you know, just getting critiqued and analyzed every single minute, every single day. So I think that's, you know, that's where a lot of his frustration comes from, besides the basketball stuff.
We have seen one thing with Boeheim over time is that when you had him as a coach, you know, he had his own style, you know, plaid suits, the checkerboards, he had a lot of things going on. You know, he got kind of creative, but now it's, you know, plain pants, plain blue shirt, white shirt. You know, it seems like Julie has kind of tailored him a little bit. How much has he changed over time in that respect? Do you think he's more fashionable now when he's standing on the sideline with you?
I'm not a fashion guy myself, but, you know, just for the record, the plaid suits, and that was way before I got here, so. But, you know, I just think, you know, as you get older, you know, you get your own style, and he has a stylist and his wife now, so this is what she has him wearing.
Now, when you're on the side here, I think what goes understated is how involved Boeheim is in so many different things. I think it's been stated before in the media, and not for myself. I've been at practice, and I've seen different, so, you know, I can personally say that he's very involved, but a lot of people say he has a hands-off approach, that he doesn't say anything, he's not very helpful, but you don't know that to be, and you're all hands-on in different respects. When you're on the sideline with the team, what is kind of your role on the side? Because he's going to go and talk to different guys, but are you sitting there grabbing your guys, your forwards, and trying to dictate certain things that you're seeing while the game is going on? How involved are you in that respect?
Well, you know, like, you know, the dynamic of our staff is everyone has a position. You know, we're called position coaches. And so you, as a position coach and assistant coach during game day, you're trying to help your guys out as much as possible with information or whatever the case may be. Things that, you know, you're just looking for. Sometimes I'm not looking at the whole team, where coach is looking at the whole team. So it may be little things that, you know, he may not be looking at or recognizing that I will, or Coach Mack will with the guards, or Coach Hot with the bigs. You know, so during the game, we're trying to help them and tell them, you know, to look for different things and help them be more efficient. You know, and coach is speaking as a general, as a whole, offense and defense, not just a little small particulars, as we're more that small particular.
And when you look at your forwards, Adrian Autry, once again here, a wake-up call with Dan Satora live from Borio's Restaurant. When you look at the guys that you have, and we'll start with Chris McCullough, we'll start there with him. Through these 9 games that you've had so far, some of those intricate pieces, things that you've been able to see, how are you kind of defining where he's at right now? What type of pieces of him have you been able to pick out of a game?
Well, I think, you know, he's a kid that you know, came to Steph Little campus with a lot of expectations. He's a very, very mild-mannered kid, and he learns quickly, and he's just really picking things up as we go. He's a student of the game. He likes watching film, so he watches a lot of film of himself and certain situations. So I think, you know, he's, you know, every time it's a situation that he may struggle with, we watch it and we work on it, and it gets better.
Way to Chris McCaul. He's had his moments where he's been able to get a double-double. He's been on the boards. He's had some quiet games like he did against Louisiana Tech. Hasn't really been in foul trouble too often, but it happened recently. What are the biggest areas that you're kind of keying in on him and saying, okay, you know what, I got to spend a little more time with this with him? What are you kind of gauging from him at this point? That there may be some of those, not problem areas, but teaching tools.
Well, I think, you know, for most freshmen, it's a focus, you know, just to stand engaged and focus, you know, while you're on the court. You know, we can't have no dull moments or fall asleep moments, as I say, because it's, especially with our defense, you know, they give up. You know, that's a three-pointer, that's a two-pointer, that's, you know, points that's given up. You know, and then also being able to recognize the opportunity of when to shoot, you know, a jump shot, or when to try to, you know, trying to get closer to the paint. You know, and I think he's really good around the paint. So, you know, we spent a lot of time on that, just trying to recognize, you know, how to set yourself up and get in a good position under the basket.
When you have him in practice, is it? I mean, obviously, you can do a lot of things in practice to teach, and in game time, you know, certain things are going to happen. Maybe guys are going to go to their comfort places and change up a little bit. Do you feel it's difficult to tell him, you know what, instead of taking a jump shot, or instead of being at this point, why don't you go a little bit closer to the basket? Is it hard to get him? Like you said, he's effective there, but is it difficult to get him to kind of stay in the paint area? Does he want to take that shot a little bit more than you think he should, or how does he balance it out right now?
I think he's really done a great job of mixing it up. You know, I just think he's not been asked in high school to be able to play, you know, down there, but he's really good down there, comfortably. And I was kind of a surprise that he was as good as he is down there, you know, in that paint area, left hand, right hand, finishes and stuff like that. So, you know, and I think he's had some success with that. And Chris is when he has some success, he'll keep going back to it. So it's just not a matter of, you know, he picks things up quickly. And he's very comfortable. So, you know, when you're that skilled, sometimes, you know, it's like that army knife that has all the different little gadgets on it. Just sometimes you just don't know which one to use. So I think, you know, that's where we come in as coaches, to try to point out different things for him as the game goes on.
With a guy that kind of had an interesting situation coming in, Chris had NBA scouts before he was coming to college. People wanted to know about his character, about, you know, how you view his play. Have you been in that situation a lot where you're answering questions about the future before he's even started the present? Have you, besides Chris, been in that scenario a lot?
No, this is the first one that I've experienced as far as a kid coming into college with the NBA, you know, kind of on the NBA board already, kind of, so to speak, as far as the interest in games and trying to figure it out. So this is the first time that I've experienced it, just before he even really played the game, taking those calls and guys wanting to come by and see him practice.
Before we take our next step aside here for a few minutes, Adrian Autry here on Wake Up Call with Dan Storer live from Wario's Restaurant. When you look at Chris overall right now, is he growing the way that a freshman, a true freshman, should be? Is he on pace in your mind? Or are there some things that are making you stop and say, okay, you know what, I thought we had gotten to a certain point, we're not there yet. Where is he right now in your mind as far as shooting, rebounding, doing the little intricate things, going after the ball? I mean, we can look at a stat sheet and stats lie all the time. So what is the overall game telling you right now about Chris McCaul?
I think as a freshman, he's really doing better than most freshmen. Again, you know, I was joking one day with Pierre, I was watching film, and if he he made at least half the shots that he's missing that he should be making, and he got a couple more rebounds that, you know, you think that he should be getting. He's probably one of the best freshmen, or one of the best players in college basketball, because his numbers are very good. You know, 14 points, close to 9 rebounds a game. You know, I think the biggest thing is that the way he's rebounding the ball, you know, he knew he had the ability, but just to be able to rebound it at the rate that he's rebounding right now is really pleasing.
So, Kevin, just to follow up with that, rebounding-wise, you know, it's about vision. It's about being in the right place at the right time. It's about setting yourself up, boxing out. There's fundamentals that go into it, but there's also common sense that goes into that, trying to feel out certain things. How do you feel he's doing on his positioning? Because some rebounds are freak ones, and they'll come in your direction. Other ones you got to chase. How do you feel he's setting himself up for rebounds offensively and defensively? Because we know when we get into the ACC that it's going to be a very physical game with certain teams like Louisville and Pittsburgh down there.
You know, I think Chris is one of those guys. Some people that just gravitate to the basketball, kind of always is around it, getting his hand on and stuff like that. I think the biggest thing is really Chris being able to corral some rebounds, you know, with two hands instead of one, and or being able to corral them while he gets hit or banged or something like that. I think that's the biggest thing that he has to continue to work on.
That's coming from Adrian Autry, Syracuse Orange men's basketball alum, as well as current assistant coach. He will be back with me here on Wake Up Call with Dan Satora, Borio's Restaurant. For those not on premises that are listening in, 8891 McDonald's Parkway in Cicero, best seat in Central New York. Great food, great atmosphere. And, of course, we're here once a month. So, and one of us, I guess, is okay to look at. I'll give you that, Adrian. So we'll do that. But we'll be back here, Wake Up Call with Dan Satora, in a few minutes, and we will be going into B.J. Johnson and Tyler Roberson, the unfortunate spotlight characters of Jim Boeheim's latest comments.
You feel like you've seen every place in Central New York, but unless you've been to Borio's Restaurant, you've never truly seen Central New York the way that it should be seen. No matter what the season, out on Oneida Lake, there is no better view than Borio's Restaurant. From banquets to getting something to eat to Sunday brunch, Borio's Restaurant offers authenticity to Central New York. It offers a difference to Central New York. Whether it's your anniversary or a graduation party, a bridal shower, a wedding, Borio's Restaurant is where people go to have the experiences of a lifetime, with the owners being a part of your meal, being a part of your experience, of your time there. The owners care, the local people that always come back care, and the people that come in from out of state just to have a feel of what Central New York means to them, they care. Go to a place where people care about you, and your experience will never be equaled by any other place. The best view in town is at Borio's Restaurant. Head there now, 8891 McDonald's Parkway in Cicero, New York. Open Tuesday through Sunday, and remember Sunday brunch. Borio's Restaurant, 8891 McDonald's Parkway in Cicero, New York.
Welcome back here to Wake Up Call with Dan Satora, live from Borio's Restaurant. Every single month, Adrian Autry, Syracuse Orange men's basketball alum, current assistant coach, and a future head coach somewhere that's going to be blessed, and I've told him that a long time ago. Adrian Autry here with me, Dan Satora, for Wake Up Call live from Borio's Restaurant. For those listening in, 8891 McDonald's Parkway in Cicero, New York, best seat in Central New York. And Adrian and I have talked about Chris McCullough. We've talked about the many different times of Jim Boeheim as far as yelling, as well as his outfits that he likes to wear. So we've covered a lot of different things, but now it's time to go to the two guys that have been critiqued the most. And it's difficult. I mean, these guys, Tyler Roberson, B.J. Johnson, followed them through the recruiting in high school, had an opportunity to talk to them before they got here. So I've known them for a while, and they haven't really had the wrath of Boeheim in a media press conference in a long time. But the question's been asked to you, and it's something that I think as well, is that when Boeheim knows what he's doing with the media, when he wants to say something, he'll say say it when he does and he won't. And I feel like at least a piece of what he says about the players is to kind of light a fire under their butt, get them to maybe see some things. Do you feel that it's a technique that maybe he'll use to talk about them publicly to try and assess the situation, or is it more just him talking and it has nothing to do with it?
I think it's just him talking. I don't think he motivates to the media. Straightforward and communicates with these guys pretty much every day. So I wouldn't say it's the media. I just think that after the game, those are his thoughts and those are his comments. And, you know, they ask the question, he gives them an answer. In that regard, I don't think that he, you know, maybe he does. I mean, I don't think he does, but I could be wrong. But, you know, what I do know is whenever he is expressed in the media, if it's for the player, he's already expressed that with that player before he went to the media. So I do know that.
With having Tyler Roberson and B.J. Johnson in your room, when something like that gets said, you know, when it's about catching the ball, when it's very basic things they should have learned, do you have to disaster control at all? Do you have to sit them down and talk with them? Because, I mean, obviously there's different personality for every player. Do you have to bring them aside, or do they kind of get it once it's said?
I mean, I think, you know, if you're at this level, they understand when they make a mistake, and I understand that. So it's not disaster. It's just really, you know, sometimes getting those guys to move on to the next play. Because, you know, a lot of times, you know, kids are hard on themselves as well. You know, now you got your coach, and they have parents too sometimes that's very hard on them as well. So, you know, the biggest thing is getting on to the next play and trying to make sure that doesn't happen again. But, you know, the game, sports, athletics, and anything, it's the team or the person who makes the least amount of mistakes, meaning there will be mistakes made in the game. You know, regardless if they're unforced or forced, those things happen. So, you know, I try to put a spin on it to get those guys getting to the next play.
With BJ and Tyler Roberson having, and Tyler more than BJ having more asked of him this season, at least to start off, how do you feel BJ and Tyler have responded to being on a team with a shorter bench at this point in the season? We'll go a little bit deeper into Tyler because he's obviously had more time on the floor. But how have you seen the guys kind of attack this year as opposed to last year when they were both true freshmen?
Well, again, I think in their minds when you're not playing, you think that you think it's a little bit easier. And I think they're realizing, recognizing how, you know, how difficult and how hard and how consistent they have to play. And I think that's their biggest adjustment, and being consistent and playing at a certain level day in and day out and practicing, because now you're being counted on. You know, you're not just, you know, at practice now.
Tyler Roberson, it's not a long bench, and Boeheim 7 or 8 deep is what's a normal anyways. But when you look at this team and the fact that Tyler Roberson has to be out there, has to start, has to basically have starter minutes all the way through, not somebody you just put in for a couple minutes, how have you seen him, more so than BJ because he's had the time, through 9 games, how have you seen Tyler Roberson grow as far as what you've been able to take away?
Well, it's really been inconsistent for Tyler just because he's had some injuries and him trying to get himself healthy. I think the last game was the first time that Tyler's been 100% healthy, and we've seen what type of player he can be, and we knew he was healthy because, you know, he practiced. He's a different person in practice. So, again, you know, Tyler's been a little bit more difficult because he's been up and down and dealing with an injury and trying to fight through it and things like that. They still learn through experience. So, but, you know, the one thing about him, he keeps coming. He keeps trying. He keeps getting better each day. So, you know, I think we'll see more of what he did, maybe not from a number standpoint, but just from being a healthy standpoint, active body, high flyer, energy guy.
A jump shot is something that obviously all the forwards have had to work on over time. C.J. Fair was one of those products. Jeremy Grant left, kind of getting to a better place with that. Where is Tyler Roberson's jump shot in your mind as far as from when you first met him to where he is now?
I think his leaps and bounds better. He's really worked diligently at that. I think he's more consistent now. It's you know, he had to make some tweaks to his form and stuff like that, and we've worked hard to do that. And now I think he's starting to, he's comfortable with his shot, and now it's just a matter of him getting a couple down and getting in games. And I think, you know, he's a really good shooter from 15 feet, you know, from that high post short corner. That was really good.
A guy that obviously can shoot a little bit farther away from the basket, but has shown it a little bit, but not had a ton of time necessarily to do so. Where is B.J. Johnson's jump shot at in your mind? Because you and I talked about how he can be an accent to Trevor. Sometimes he would have to fill in when Trevor's not having a good night. Where is B.J.'s jump shot right now, even though we haven't seen him as much?
His jump shot is still, you know, based on him being able to do the other things. I think he's put a lot of pressure on himself. You know, he's not shot the ball the way we know he's capable of shooting the ball. And so for him, it's just a matter of taking his time, getting comfortable and knocking down, you know, a shot. And I think he's one of those guys. When I first got here, James Sutherland was here, and it was his junior year, and he was always the first couple of games, a shot roll out there, in and out here. And I was always just saying he's one or two jump shots away from getting it going. And I feel the same way with BJ. I think he's one or two jump shots of going down to really get it going and being someone that can, you know, eventually help us, you know, in that area of 3-point shooting.
I want to go to a statement that Boeheim had made at the press conference where he said about, and we'll talk about catching the ball one-handed, but with BJ, he said specifically, if BJ is going to play, is how he prefaced his statement that he was making. He said, if he's going to play. So how sold do you think Boeheim is on getting him out there, or do you think he still has a lot to prove?
I think this whole team, all these players still have a lot to prove and have a lot to learn. So again, he's not just BJ. And I think it's, you know, pretty much most of the team, besides, you know, excluding Trevor and Rakeem and, you know, and Mike Benedict to a certain extent, you know, really just being able to prove and be able to produce day in and day out.
Sixth grade, ninth grade, those were the two different time periods that were given. I played basketball growing up, and I think that I learned about two hands when I was in, I think I was seven, and I was at Pastimes downtown on Salina Street. So he makes that statement, and he makes it about your guys, Roberson and Johnson. How do you handle that situation? You know, like you said, that he talks to the players and they know about it beforehand anyways. But something like that where he said, when us as a coaching staff have to worry about these things, we can't even think about running the next play. How are you kind of assessing what's going on? Because he was the one that talked about it. How are you handling it?
Well, again, it's an ongoing process, a learning process to break down bad habits and try to create new habits. They say it takes 10,000 hours to break a habit or create a new habit. So, being able to get that thing in their minds and consistently doing it is one thing, and that's where we're at. You know, we talk about it, we try to practice it. You know, but it's an adjustment. So you just got to stay with it. This is a process. Things happen. You know, you just try to correct them, and things like that shouldn't happen. You know, it's not an excuse, but you know they do happen, and those are examples of why we should catch the ball with two hands.
I have never, and maybe your kids can say different, I've never heard you yell, ever. Not at practice, not in a game. Your daughter's laughing right now. Will you take these guys aside? And, I mean, is this a yelling thing at this point if fundamentally they don't catch the ball with two hands? I mean, will you raise your voice with the team, or is that something that is not your style of teaching?
I'm intense, but, the way it is right now, if you make those type of silly mistakes, you know, I think it's going to cost you some playing time. You know, I always say the bench sometimes is the best teacher than anyone yelling and screaming anymore. So, you know, I mean, every now and then, you know, I'll raise my voice and just to stress the importance of something that simple, you know, of being able to, you know, a play that they should make, you know, and they kind of, you know, goof it up or mess it up because of the concentration or, for example, not catching ball with two hands, something like that, things that they should do. You know, sometimes you do have to raise your voice.
I know we had drills as kids to know how to dribble the ball, to know how to catch a two-hand, very fundamental stuff, to know not to double dribble, certain things, no potty shots, so to speak. So, I mean, these are all easy things. When you have guys that you say it takes 10,000 hours to break a habit or to start a new one, when you have two guys catching the ball with one hand, what can you do in practice? What drills can you literally do outside of telling them, hey, you're smarter than this? Is there anything at this point in the game that you can do in practice to change something as simple as that?
Well, we practice a lot of stuff with two hands and, you know, keep going over and over again, and we really stress it and keep home, you know, it's passing drills. I mean, the same drills that you learn when you're growing up, you know, those drills are still effective to this day. And I think now they know what it is. And sometimes we'll try to create an atmosphere, you know, where it's an uncomfortable atmosphere where they have to go catch the ball with two hands or, you know, it's more than just catching the ball with two hands. It's other things too, dribbling the basketball or making a one-hand pass instead of a two-hand pass. You know, we try to stress the importance of fundamentals every day.
When I was growing up, different coaches had different techniques. So when you see different coaches doing different things, your coaching staff, you know, with you, with Boeheim, with Jerry and Mike, when you have to teach the things that should already be known, how do you handle it as a staff? Because some coaches, the biggest threat was running suicides. It's the one thing I didn't want to do. I would do laps around a building. I'd do 20 laps instead of doing start and stop with a suicide. What is your punishment if you keep having these issues and these problems? What have you seen be effective? Because, I mean, I think what we forget a lot of times is these are still teenagers. They're still kids. So when they have to be taught something, what is the go-to for this team?
Easy question, Dan. The bench. That's what happens. The bench. If they continue to make these things, they're not going to get a game to play. You know, and it starts to practice, and we watch practice every day. We review it, and if you see those things, you know, something Coach said the other day, which is so true, the things that you see happen during the game, those are things that happen during the practice, and sometimes, most of the time, the things that you're going to, it's going to happen during the games. So you need to practice, you know what I'm saying, practice, you know, perfect practice. You know, and that's what we try to incorporate and have those guys do. So, again, something that may happen in practice, if you see it in a game, make sure you know you're here and gone. So I think sometimes that's the only way that you can, you know, get better. Because all these guys, they understand, they want to play, they want to be able to help and contribute. So, you know, getting out there and playing, if they have to catch the ball with two hands to get out there and play, I think the message will get to them.
And that leads into another piece of this that we've talked about. It's a short bench, and it's a different team. It's not as deep as they were in the past. So can you have these teaching elements and these teaching tools? Because if BJ messes up and Tyler messes up and Trevor messes up, if you're in the end, rocks in foul trouble, it seems like your biggest teaching element of the bench sometimes this season can't work if there's multiple players, multiple problems. So how does this year's team punish a player to teach them a lesson when you are going to need a certain amount of them out there?
I don't think it's so much about punishment. I think it's about results. And the results will not be, you know, in our favor if we continue to play like this and make these type of mistakes. Besides, it's not about the punishment. It's about being able to get a result. And the result that you want to do is try to win every game and help your team win. So, again, I don't think punishment is the right way or the discipline is the right way. I think it's just, you know, results. You got to get the best results. And if you don't, if you're not one of those people that can help get the result that we're looking for, I think sometimes, you know, the punishment or the discipline would be, you know, you won't be on the court as much.
Can this team do that with Caleb Joseph, Trevor Cooney, Rakeem Christmas? And I think it's unfair logically right now to say it about Rock because I think he's been doing more than he's done in the past. But let's just say that those are the guys that are screwing up and there's really not anybody to take their place. What's the teaching tool for them if you talk about minimizing their time on the court? If it's somebody like Rakeem Christmas, how do you minimize his time when there really isn't an active center behind him?
Really, just as we continue to talk about this, I just want to, it's funny because this team is young and, you know, our record's 6-3 right now. We could easily be 7-1 or 8-0. Everybody can talk about two different things. We just have periods of times in the game right now where, you know, you may see these mistakes and, you know, it makes the game closer than it should be, or, you know, we lose. So I think it's not like a every game thing, you know. I just think it's something that, you know, as a team, we just got to get better. And it's not one of those things where it's just, you know, I mean, those are two incidents, I think, that kind of caught, you know, the eye of coach and, you know, again, media, they have to do their job. And it's something that's kind of, it wasn't meant to be funny or whatever, but it was meant to be just, you know, how simple it is. And I think everybody kind of ran where it takes his place. So again, I think we're getting off on the wrong thing about this. You know, he's got, you know, those are mistakes, and I think at that time coach is very frustrated with it. But, you know, it's not about punishment, like I said before. It's really about getting the results and playing better basketball. And, you know, you can teach it through different areas and different ways, but these guys, every guy that's here wants to be a great player and wants to be a part of Syracuse. They want to help Syracuse. So, you know, it's not always about punishment. They see it, they understand it, and they'll make the effort to try to rectify it.
When you talk about this team being young, Adrian, here, Wake Up Call with Dan Satora, live from Borio's Restaurant. Adrian Autry here with me, Syracuse Orange Men's basketball alum and current assistant coach. This team this year, like you said, you very well, without a couple mistakes, could be undefeated right now. Certain things happen at different times. One of the things that I think goes unnoticed, and I made sure to include it in my story with all the Boeheim quotes after the Louisiana Tech game, is that as many negatives as he focused on, he said it's not that they can't. And there are things that this team has done better than better teams that we've had, and they're not as good as those teams, but maybe they made a better player, a better decision. I think it's important that, I don't think Boeheim says anything that he doesn't mean. I don't think he sugarcoats anything, and I don't think that he's going to go out and say something's better than it is. So as many negative, we're not where we need to be, he still said, but this thing can swing. How do you kind of take a comment like that, going off of what you said, that this is a young team and we have to remember that there is a learning curve?
Again, just watching the film and working with these guys every day, and you look at the, you know, the team and what we've done so far. We haven't played, you know, put together 40 minutes of, you know, good basketball. So with all that being said, you know, having these moments and still needing to get better, we're sitting here at 6-3, which is not bad. It's not, you know, what we've been in the past, but it's not bad. And the teams that we lost to were all good teams. You know, I mean, Michigan, you know, I think we, after that, they kind of spiraled out. But, you know, Louisiana Tech is picked to win their conference, NCAA team. They had two NBA prospects on that team. You know, so I think, you know, people understand the teams that we're playing. This schedule is a lot, you know, not a lot tougher, but it's very competitive, especially for a young team like we have.
That coming from Adrian Autry. We're going to take a really quick step aside here, finish up from Borio's Restaurant, 8891 McDonald's Parkway, Cicero, New York. Best seat in Central New York for those that are listening in. to everybody here. We appreciate you being here. Make sure you get your 10% off Boreo's gift card that you'll have here. And Adrian and I will be back for a few more minutes.
You feel like you've seen every place in Central New York, but unless you've been to Boreo's restaurant, you've never truly seen Central New York the way that it should be seen. No matter what the season, out on Oneida Lake, there is no better view than Boreo's restaurant. From banquets to getting something to eat to Sunday brunch, Boreo's restaurant offers authenticity to Central New York. It offers a difference to Central New York. Whether it's your anniversary or a graduation party, a bridal shower, a wedding, Boreo's restaurant is where people go to have the experiences of a lifetime, with the owners being a part of your meal, being a part of your experience, of your time there. The owners care, the local people that always come back care, and the people that come in from out of state just to have a feel of what Central New York means to them, they care. Go to a place where people care about you, and your experience will never be equaled by any other place. The best view in town is at Boreo's Restaurant. Head there now, 8891 McDonald's Parkway in Cicero, New York. Open Tuesday through Sunday, and remember Sunday brunch. Boreo's Restaurant, 8891 McDonald's Parkway in Cicero, New York.
Back here, Wake Up Call with Dan Satora, Boreo's Restaurant. For those listening in, 8891 McDonald's Parkway in Cicero, New York. The best seat right on Oswego Lake. No matter what the season is, looks beautiful out here. Dressed up for Christmas and the holiday season. Adrian Autry, Syracuse Orange men's basketball assistant coach and a former player for the Syracuse Orange, and myself, Dan Satora, broadcaster here with you. And we thank Boreo's Restaurant and the Boreo family for everything that they have done for Adrian, myself, Rob Drummond, who comes here for football with me throughout the season. Where is the 2-3 zone at in your mind right now? Because as we know, the 2-3 zone is only as good as your personnel that you have. What are these personnel doing with it right now in your mind?
You know what? We have spurts. You know, now we're trying to work on being consistent. Sometimes we're really, really good. Sometimes, you know, we're not. And I think the thing that we're trying to work on right now is being consistent. Being consistently good, playing consistent defense. So, you know, to answer your question, it's still up and down, but we know we can get better. That's really the concentration.
And lastly, for Adrian, live here, Wake Up Call with Dan Satora, Adrian Autry here with myself, Dan Satora at Boreo's Restaurant, 8891 McDonald's Parkway in Cicero, New York. This is not a basketball question. You and I have built a friendship over the last few years, which I thank God for, because I know how good of a coach you are. But as far as being a family man and a person, and the scare that you had with your health and everything that happened over the past year, you know, it's good to have you sitting here. So I think it's only fair with the holiday season, with Christmas and the other holidays that are going on, to ask you what you're most thankful for and what you're most looking forward to end this year and start the next year.
Well, you know, you're always thankful for your family, your immediate family, your sisters, your brothers, your siblings, your father, your mother. You know, I'm always thankful for that. But, you know, I always look forward to Christmas, because I have, all of my family here, all my children. We celebrate it. It's a big thing in our house, and that's what the holiday is about. But Christmas is my favorite holiday. Always have my family here and being able to spend time with them and to watch the excitement on your children's faces and just experiencing everything. And then it's a year coming to an end, so it's my favorite holiday.
Well, on behalf of Adrian Autry and myself, Dan Satora, we want to wish everybody here Merry Christmas, Happy Holidays. Thank you for coming out. Make sure you get your card if you haven't yet. And for everybody listening in, Merry Christmas and Happy Holidays as well. Adrian and I will be here in the new year, January 2015, and we will be in ACC play the next time we come and talk with these people. So it'll be an interesting year, but as always, Adrian, thank you very much.
Thanks for having me.